You're turning there. I heard a question this week that a man always started off his conversations with a new acquaintance. He would ask them this: what have you done that you believe in and that you're proud of? That's a deep question for "Hi, my name is." And then he says, what have you done that you believe in and that you're proud of? I mean, it just seems like really a crazy question to be asking someone. But he said, to me, that's a more interesting question than to ask someone, hey, what do you do for a living? Because sometimes what somebody does for a living might just be temporarily where they are, and they don't want to have themselves defined by that, or they want to say, well, I'm more than that. And he shared a few of the answers he'd gotten over the years. He said, one woman said, for me, it's being a mother to my three kids and trying to raise them well. He said once he was talking to a carpenter, and the carpenter said, I really believe in good craftsmanship, and I enjoy practicing good craftsmanship. I enjoy displaying good craftsmanship. Another woman said, I just have this goal to not just own a bookstore, but I want to own the best bookstore in the area, and it is. And you look and you think, that's such a deep, probing question. And he said, I don't really care how they answer. I just want them to have it on their mind. What have you done that you believe in and that you're proud of? What would you point to in your own life? I think the reason it's such a great question is because it calls us to consider our purpose. And I think sometimes we can get to a point that we fail to consider our purpose. All we're considering is, how am I going to get through today? How am I going to get through this situation? How am I going to move past this? And it's a good question because it causes us to consider what we're doing and to consider why we're doing it. And we are talking about what you were made for, what you were made to blank. There's a few things I can tell you. I can tell you for sure the big purpose God made you for. We already talked about it a little bit. The big purpose that God made everyone for, Isaiah 43:7, is His glory. Bring all who claim me as their God, for I have made them for my what? Glory. It's 8 o'clock. We're going to try that again. For I have made them for my glory. Wow, you are here. And it is I who created them. And so this is the first greatest purpose God has made us for. You know, especially working with teenagers over the years, a lot of times they're moving into a very crazy part of life. I'm 40 and I feel like I'm moving into a very crazy part of life. But you know, a lot of times they come and say, how am I supposed to know what I'm supposed to do? And see, here's the thing. They're always on the secondary. I'm not saying that where you go to school or the job you have is not important. What I'm saying is, how is your relationship to the Lord? Because we know God's will for our lives. The Bible tells us to give thanks in all things, for this is the will of God for you, that we are supposed to pray without ceasing, that we're supposed to avoid sexual immorality. Basically, anywhere that you see God saying, do this or don't do this, you're seeing the will of God. You're seeing His purpose for you and saying, if you'll do this, you're going to find yourself within my purpose, which is to glorify me. So I can tell you right now, I know the main purpose God has for you, and that's to glorify Him. And I know that you can't do that apart from Jesus. You cannot glorify God by trying to live a good life for God, but ignoring the great gift He gave. It's not possible. Now, the second part, if you say, okay, Heath, I'm glorifying God. Boy, it sounds like the rich young ruler. Yeah, I'm doing all that. I'm glorifying God, I'm doing all that. Now listen, you're probably not doing it perfectly, but if your goal in life is to glorify God, then that's what God is asking us for, a heart after Him. Perfection is not possible, that's why Jesus died. So you say, okay, Heath, I'm doing that. What's the second thing? I don't know. I have no idea what God's specific purpose is for you past glorifying Him. But I can tell you this, you have one. Now Jeremiah 29:11 is used a lot. And if any of you are like, oh, here he goes, using Jeremiah 29:11. Listen, Jeremiah 29:11 was a promise that was given to the people of God that God was going to restore them if they would seek after Him. And I believe that that is a promise that is displayed in the life of a Christian. If you're seeking after God, you can expect God to be working plans for you. So he says, I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans for welfare and not for evil, plans to give you a future and a hope. Listen, he's talking about plans, and that's usually where we focus. The job, the relationship, the house, the whatever. We usually are focusing on the plans, but we're forgetting the future and the hope. We're forgetting the big picture. We're forgetting the purpose of why God is doing what he's doing. So even this isn't independent of that first purpose, because if you go on to Jeremiah 29:11, then you go to verses 12 and 13, he says, and if you want to seek me and find me, you have to seek me with your whole heart. So people cannot just point to this and say, well, you know, God has plans for me. Yes, but if you're not seeking after God, if you're not glorifying God, you should not expect to readily understand the specific purpose for your life. I think it would be a disservice to you for you to understand the specific purpose for your life if you're not living the first purpose. See, that's how a lot of people pray. They're always praying that God would just give them the secondary stuff, but they can just avoid the holiness. You can't just avoid the holiness of God. It has to be what drives you to be the person God is calling you to be. So I guess the question becomes, okay, then why do we struggle to understand our purpose? I think it's because sometimes we're living the dot-to-dot of God's plans. Remember dot-to-dot pictures? Man, I always felt like an artist when dot-to-dot pictures were passed out. And you'd look at it, and it'd be all these crazy dots, and you'd fill it out. Now, the worst ones were the ones when it already had, like, the eyes in it and, like, the trunk on the elephant. And you're like, I already know what this is. I don't even really want to do the picture. So I loved it when they'd give you the dot-to-dot, and you had no idea what it was until you finished. But here was the point. You couldn't just go from dot to dot however you wanted to. You had to recognize that you were doing it with a purpose. And I think what happens, and this happens to me too, what happens is we're moving from dot to dot to dot, but we've forgotten that there's a bigger picture. Well, right now I'm praying to get from the dot of not being healthy to the dot of being healthy. Or I'm trying to get from the dot of unemployed to the dot of employed. I only need a picture that's one line long. No, you don't. See, what happens is you end up having all these one line here and one line there, and there's no picture. God's calling us to something bigger. God made you for something bigger than just surviving day to day. Now, he does provide for our daily needs, and he does that so that we realize it's bigger than that. God has done something so much bigger. And when we look at the life of Moses, we see a guy who's beginning to understand that God is doing something bigger in him than just the dot-to-dot of his life. And so today I want you to walk out with this big point. You might say, Heath, this doesn't seem like a very big point. I have found the sermons that I have remembered most of my life are the ones that just reminded me of things I already knew. So if you're looking for anything like really new and earth-shattering today, maybe I shouldn't say this early in the sermon, but you may not hear anything earth-shattering today. But I hope you maybe hear something that is shattering the normalcy. And sometimes as Christians, that's what needs to be shattered for us, is normalcy. Every person has been made to fulfill a purpose. So I am encouraging you today to not be content to go from point to point to point, but instead to consider your purpose. It drives me crazy when people ask me to pray for a situation in their lives, and we pray together, and they're growing in Christ, and they're so excited. And the reason they're growing is because God's not answering it right away. And so because God's not answering, they're growing. And then God finally helps them connect that dot. And what happens? They just put the pencil down and walk away. It drives me crazy. Not because I'm getting commission as people like stay in the church longer. It drives me crazy because I'm thinking, you are growing in the Lord and you're missing out. You're falling back. You're falling off. I've been trying to learn German. Guess what? Don't take a day off when learning German. You come back, and I'm like, das what? I don't know what this is. Actually, I think it would be the what. But anyway, you had to make sure that you're moving on this constant move. And the great thing is, the last dot of that picture for you doesn't happen until you breathe your last breath. There's always a picture that is being displayed. But, you know, sometimes as you'd be completing it, even though you're not done, you're kind of seeing where it's going. I think some of us need to realize if we're at a place that maybe we should be seeing where it's going by now. And if not, do we maybe need to pick up the pencil? Is it time to start fresh on what God's calling us to? Take a look at Exodus chapter 2. I want you to look at verse 11. This is really the crux of where Moses' life takes a big turn. Exodus chapter 2, verse 11. It says this, one day when Moses had grown up, he went out to his people and looked on their burdens, and he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his people. Now, many of us have had this. One day. one day. It says that one day, after all this life that Moses had lived, one day something happened. All of us have some one day in our lives that was a major day of major decision. We made some decision about our job, or we made some decision about school. I mean, Nikki and I talk a lot about, what if I hadn't gone to Mizzou? What if I hadn't gone there and met her? Like, how terrible my life would be. That's what she says. How terrible my life would be. And that's what I says, too. And yes, I just says. It's the 8 o'clock service. You got to use bad grammar sometimes to keep people up. So I look at that, and I think about that one decision, but I saw so clearly that God was displaying that that's where I was supposed to go. And I see the bigger picture, or the bigger purpose of what God was doing in that. And so you just have this one day all of a sudden, or maybe there was that one day for me in July of 1992 when I finally recognized and I finally agreed with God. God, you're right. I'm a sinner. And I have no ability to save myself. I am not good enough. I need Jesus to save me. That was one day that was pretty monumental in my life. And so Moses has a day like this too. And so it says when he had grown up, this is when he was 40. So I found out I just grew up. I'm so excited. But you see, Nikki's like, for sure. So you see this in Moses' life. He has these 40-year periods in his life. And so now this is the first 40 years of his life. He's grown up, it says. And he's a guy that a lot of you know, or maybe not, had kind of what we might call a challenging childhood. When your mom sticks you in a basket and puts you in the river, I would consider that a challenging childhood. And remember last week in Exodus 1, we saw a Pharaoh who was very intimidated by the Hebrew people that are growing. He says, we got to get rid of them, so let's get rid of them at birth. The Hebrew midwives weren't very helpful with that, shocker. And so he says, okay, now if you're walking down the street and you see a Hebrew woman carrying an infant boy, you have legal authority to toss that child in the Nile. So, Moses' parents have him, and they hide him as best they can for 3 months. And it says at the end of 3 months, they just couldn't hide him anymore. We don't know exactly why, but for some reason, couldn't hide him anymore. So she makes, literally it says an ark. Takes this basket. I mean, if you ever saw The Prince of Egypt, just forget everything you saw in that movie. So she takes this basket, makes it waterproof, puts Moses in it, takes it down, doesn't just throw it in the middle of the river, takes it and throws it, doesn't throw it, let's say gently places, Moses down on the side of the river amongst the reeds. And then she walks away. And we don't know exactly what she was hoping for. We don't know if she just said, this child's probably going to die and I just can't be around when it happens. I just can't. I can't have someone take my child out of my arms and kill him in front of me. Or maybe she genuinely felt, if I place him here, perhaps some Egyptian will come along or some person will come along or somehow he'll be shown mercy. And so she leaves, and Moses has two older siblings, Miriam and Aaron, and Miriam, the sister, she's kind of tagging along to see what's going to happen. She's watching, and all of a sudden, a woman walks down to the river. She's going to take a bath because no indoor plumbing, and it turns out it's Pharaoh's daughter, and she finds a Hebrew baby. And fortunately for Moses, she must have been a teenager because she's like, well, my dad says they're bad, so I'm going to like them. And so she decides she's going to take the baby and do the opposite. And so Miriam pops out at this time, and Miriam's like, hey, it looks like you found a baby. You want someone to take care of your baby? She's like, that'd be amazing. And Miriam goes, I know just the person. Goes and gets her mom, brings her mom. And so basically the princess of Egypt asks Moses' mom, hey, how would you like to take care of your kid and I'll pay you? I mean, there's a lot of moms in here going, for sure, I see that hand back there. And so, for sure, that's what happens. So she takes him back and basically takes care of him for probably roughly 3 years. And then she has to give him back. But for 3 years, he's there with his mom. Now he's living a completely different dot. He has the best education. It actually tells us that in Acts chapter 7. This is why you need to read the whole Bible. If I'm preaching on Exodus 2, I don't just look at Exodus 2 and nothing else. Because in Acts chapter 7, Stephen, one of the early disciples there in the church, he's giving a defense in front of the Jewish leaders, and he's using Moses' life to demonstrate how the Jewish people so oftentimes have just been resistant towards God. And so we get a lot of extra details about Moses, and he says that Moses in Acts 7 had the finest education you could possibly have. Historians Josephus and Eusebius also tell us that Moses was the general of the southern army of Egypt, And this wasn't kind of like, you know, in England today, you know, all the princes have to serve. It's not like some sort of just honorary title. Like, he really had to lead this army. The Ethiopians came into Egypt and were, quite honestly, just kidnapping people. So Moses not only pushed them out, but then led the southern army of Egypt on a 10-year siege against the Ethiopians. He was a warrior. He knew how to lead people, and he knew how to say, do this, and people did that thing. But despite this position, I mean, so to really understand when he's walking away, despite his position, he's beginning to understand who he really is. Let's take a look at the totality there, Exodus chapter 2. Let's look at verses 11 through 15 and get the rest of this picture here. So one day when Moses had grown up, he went out to his people and looked on their burdens, and he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his people. He looked this way and that, and seeing no one, he struck down the Egyptian and hit him in the sand. When he went out the next day, behold, two Hebrews were struggling together. And he said to the man in the wrong, "Why do you strike your companion?" He answered, "Who made you a prince and a judge over us? Do you mean to kill me as you killed the Egyptian?" Then Moses was afraid and thought, "Surely the thing is known." And when Pharaoh heard of it, he sought to kill Moses. But Moses fled from Pharaoh and stayed in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well. Now, when I was reading this, there was one thing that came out of me. Twice you see that Moses knew his people. So I'm at his people, and I think, how did he know they were his people? Well, first of all, we know that Jewish people and Egyptian people didn't look very similar. In fact, I told you last week there's some historical evidence about having found Joseph's house, and one of the proofs of it is the Hebrews look so much different that they know that this is not the house of a person who was native Egyptian. So first of all, there would have been some physical features within Moses that he would have known he was an Egyptian. But secondly, it appears that his family influence never diminished in his life. I remember kind of reading the story the first time, and like all of a sudden he's just talking to Aaron and Miriam like he's known them forever. And I'm thinking, how did he know that this was his brother and sister? It sounds to me that he had a family connection that continued on, because in fact, Aaron and Miriam basically are helping him lead all the way through the desert. You see this happening between the three of them. So he clearly knows who they are. And there's a few ways this may have happened. I think there's a possibility that because Moses' mom had been so important in his life, that the princess may have allowed to continue. Did she know it was his mom? We don't know. But there was obviously some sort of connection that continued to happen there. And here's the other reason that's important. When you look at the first verse of Exodus chapter 2, it tells us that Moses' parents were both Levites, which means they were the clan that the priests came from. So Moses wasn't just in a house where they talked about church. He was in a house where people prayed. And I doubt that there was a day that Moses was ever in his mom's house that she didn't pray for him. I'm sure there were times that he came back, and before he left, she prayed for him. I'm just certain that that must have happened, because you see, he has this identification with the Hebrew people, and the burden of the Hebrews had obviously been burdening him for some time, because then he has one day that he just can't ignore it anymore. One day that he just can't pretend that while he's living in luxury, that their labors don't matter. And so he decides to live his purpose, and the question is, what was his purpose? Not to be a prince to the wealthy and powerful, but to be a deliverer to the helpless. You see him, he sees an Egyptian taskmaster beating a Hebrew. The Hebrew word literally means he's beating him to death. He is killing this man. And so Moses looks left and right, and then he strikes. It says he strikes him down. He kills the guy. Did he intend to kill the guy? We don't know. We know he's trying to protect one of his own people. But the guy is killed, and so Moses buries him in the sand. But now Moses is feeling confident of his purpose. I'm a deliverer. He's making a clean break. You begin to see it happen. In fact, you also see it in Hebrews 11, which also tells us about the faith of Moses and gives us a little more understanding as to the decision he made. Hebrews 11, 24 through 26. By faith, Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to be mistreated with the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt. So you see him, he's making this clean break. He knows if he stays in the temple, if he stays in the palace, if he stays with his family, his Egyptian family, life could be pretty good. In fact, there's a chance that he could have been in line for the throne if he had stayed. But he recognized there's a different purpose. And in fact, you see that he understands his purpose is also to glorify God. What is he refusing? He's refusing the fleeting pleasures of sin. What makes something sin? If God says don't do this, or if God says do this, when you do the opposite, that's sin. Moses identified that there was a standard, that there was a God who said this is right, this is wrong, and I want to glorify that God in the actions I take. He didn't know the name of Jesus, but he knew that God was his redeemer. He knew there was no deliverance apart from God. This general, this mighty man, he understood he couldn't do enough to impress God one day when he stood before him after he died. And so he's making this clean break. He is choosing God. Also, he's understanding his purpose that he is a deliverer. In Stephen's address, Acts 7:25, it says this of Moses. He supposed, that just happens sometimes in the Christian life. We suppose a little too much. He supposed that his brothers would understand that God was giving them salvation by his hand, but they did not understand. So here's Moses. All right, I get it. I love God. God loves me, and he's called me to deliver these people. So I'm going to deliver them, and they are just going to be so thankful. And so he goes out again. He sees two Hebrews, and they're having a struggle, and Moses is like, all right, it's me time. And he steps up there and says, brother, why art thou hitting thy brother? That's the original translation. Anyway, he's like, what are you doing, man? Stop hitting your brother. And he goes, what are you going to do? Kill me like you did the Egyptian the other day? And I mean, sometimes people are just the worst. Here Moses was so confident of what God called him to do. But now he is hurt, he is confused, and he runs into the desert. What was his plan for running into the desert? Don't die. Listen, Moses' plan for not dying was to run into the desert. Why? Because sometimes we think we've nailed down exactly how God is supposed to work. And when he does not work that way, we become very hurt and confused, and we start running places that just don't make a lot of sense. And in those moments, we have to not ask the question, why? We must ask the question, what? Not, God, why are you doing this to me? God, what are you teaching me? What are you training me for? So my family and I are living in Missouri. I have no job in ministry. I've just gotten out of a terrible church situation. In fact, I'm not even sure I want to be in ministry anymore. I've been substitute teaching. A school district offers me a job. I said, I don't have a teaching license. I said, we don't care. You've got a job here. So, I mean, I'm truly thinking maybe I'm just done with ministry because that church was the worst thing ever. But then I see this church in Pennsylvania that has a listing. And why would we move from Missouri to Pennsylvania? Because they wanted a family pastor. And they said, we want someone who will lead adult discipleship, who will kind of oversee what's going on in our youth ministries, help us with outreach. I mean, it was just like they were banging the heath drum. And I was like, yes, I want all of this. So then we got there and I did almost none of that. It's not that I didn't do that, but the music and youth guy left prior to me arriving to go plant a church. So all the things I wanted to do, they still hoped I would do, but I had to put them behind now being a worship leader and a youth pastor. And part of the reason that I had made the move I'd made is because I didn't want to be a youth pastor anymore because teenagers drove me crazy. But instead, God put me back with teenagers for 5 more years, and I can look and see why. Now, this point was in here before everything that happened this weekend happened. So I'm leading worship, and I'm learning so much. Like before, I was always viewing the music and the message as two separate things in the worship service. But then I had to start leading the music, so it was more important to me. And I began to realize this is all an opportunity for worship. Everything is an opportunity for worship. Now, if you had said, Heath, would you like to move to Pennsylvania and lead worship? I would have said, no, thank you. Move on. But God brought me there so I could learn a little bit more, and then a morning like today happens, And we realize, okay, we have some strengthening we want to do, but we also have some really strong pieces in this church. And that's really exciting. The other thing I look at and I see, we had to spend 5 more years in youth ministry. And I can tell you right now, Nikki is a billion times more the youth minister than I ever was in all my time. She learned because we had to spend 5 more years working with teenagers. And she's done such an amazing job with our students. So sometimes you say, why is God doing this? Why is God bringing me into this? Because he's continuing to help you see the big picture. I now understand worship in a way I didn't understand worship before. And I understand my purpose. I understand my purpose is to be a teacher. I love teaching. I always tell people my real help, you know, having to lead 2 services, I do the 8 o'clock and I do the 10:45, but teaching that Sunday school class in between with my young adults just fires me up. I love having a chance to talk with them, hear their questions. You say, hey, I'll give you my questions right now. No, thanks. But, you know, I do enjoy that for the most part, but this is pretty structured. We only have so much time. So, but anyway, you see, Moses was so sure of what God was going to do with him, and then suddenly Moses' plans may have not been exactly God's plans. You see, a lot of times we want God to go and do this thing, and God says, you need so much refinement. I'm glad that you kind of see where we're going with this, but you're barely on the journey, and you need to be prepared for wherever I take you. And here's the cool thing. So Moses goes to the desert. Moses is thinking, don't die. God is still at work. Take a look, Exodus chapter 2, verses 16 through 22. So he goes out. He's sitting by a well in Midian. Says this, Exodus 2:16. Now the priest of Midian had 7 daughters, and they came and drew water and filled the troughs to water their father's flock. The shepherds came and drove them away, but Moses stood up and saved them and watered their flock. When they came home to their father Reuel, he said, how is it that you've come home so soon today? They said, an Egyptian delivered us out of the hand of the shepherds and even drew water for us and watered the flock. He said to his daughters, then where is he? Why have you left the man? Call him that he may eat bread. And Moses was content to dwell with the man, and he gave Moses his daughter Zipporah, and she gave birth to a son, and he called his name Gershom, for he said, I have been a sojourner in a foreign land. So I want you to understand, Moses goes to Midian. Sometimes we hear places in the Bible, and we're like, oh, he went to Midian. That must have been super easy. No, Midian was a haul. If you've ever seen those maps of whenever the Hebrews leave Egypt and are wandering in the desert, he's doing that. He's going across that, and he's getting to the mountain where God is going to give them the Ten Commandments. This is where he's going to. So he's hauled all the way across a place that he's going to get to know really well, much better than he wants to know it in the future. But God is foreshadowing here and preparing him a little bit. And you see, he gets there. He's just sitting at the well, minding his own business. All these girls show up. They're taking care of their father's flocks. And then these shepherds come in and like, you girls need to go away because this is the man's area. And then Moses steps up and what? In verse 17, he saves them. Do you see that the context changes, but his purpose did not? Do you see that? See, sometimes we get into a different context, and so we think we're a different person. But instead, God is doing the exact same thing. God is saying, here's the purpose I made you for. He's continuing to refine Moses as a person who will care for people and a person who will be a deliverer. I mean, he's going up against these guys by himself. I think there's a chance his life could have been in danger in doing so. But he was getting up to be a protector of people who needed his protection. And so Moses is having quite the divine dot-to-dot here. He's kind of moving all over the map. And sometimes plans might seem fuzzy, but then we see how God is working those plans. We'll see that a little bit more next week in Exodus 3 as we see God and Moses really begin to have a deeper dialogue about how God is calling him. But I just want to encourage you, you must be wary of simply moving from point to point. And you say, well, Heath, what defines I'm moving from point to point? If you're just praying to see God fix something, you're doing it wrong. Because you're allowing an incomplete picture of who God is in your life. You are treating God as if he is only concerned with portions of who you are. When the reality is, God is the one who has created you, and he created you for a purpose. And if he created you for a purpose and he put his image within you, there's never a moment that God's like, oh, well, you know, do whatever you want for the next 6 to 7 months. I'm super busy. God is always concerned with our purpose and always calling us to our purpose. And so that question comes up, well, what is my purpose? Your purpose is not to go to church. I think you should. I want you to be here. But when people start defining their Christianity by going to church, they've missed it. When people start defining themselves by the job they work, they've missed it. I'm a pastor, but that's not my identity. You can't allow your job to be your identity. It breaks up families. It breaks up individuals. It's not fulfilling when you start defining yourself by something other than what God is calling you to be defined by. And so you have to, first of all, be willing to glorify God and then say, okay, God, how are you specifically calling me to serve you? There's a guy in Acts chapter 4 named Joseph. The cool thing is you only hear his name once, and usually people don't know his real name. Because Joseph was a guy that, man, if you needed encouraged, you went and hung out with Joseph. In fact, so much they stopped calling him Joseph, but instead they called him what? Barnabas. The literal word for encouragement they gave to him. And so he's the kind of guy, it didn't matter where he was. When he was in the church, he was an encourager. When he went on the mission field and he's dealing with people, sometimes they're throwing rocks at them, true story, he's an encourager. When he's dealing with a brand new Christian in Paul who says, you know, they don't like me at church, I'm just not going to go anymore. And you know what, I don't want you to hang out with me because then they're going to start hating you. And Barnabas is like, no, I'll take you to church. Let's go to church together. Or then when John Mark, who bails on a mission trip and then later says, you know what, I want to try again. And Paul's like, no way. Who steps up and says, I will take you? Barnabas, because he knew his purpose. His purpose was to be an encourager to people. And that might have some different faces, it might have some different contexts, but he knew what God had made him for. And I'm encouraging you to consider, what has God truly made you for? Moses discovered his purpose. He discovered his purpose as a deliverer, and you were made. You were made. You were created to fulfill a purpose. And if you're only focusing on the next plan, if you're only focusing on the next prayer answer, then it's like you're wandering without any understanding that God is trying to paint a bigger picture with your life. You have to be open to that because your Creator created you to glorify God. And so the question has to be asked, do you know Him? Jason Allen, the president of our seminary in Kansas City, said, you cannot live the Christian life without Christ. And people try to do it all the time. They try to come into church and say, how do I fix my marriage? How do I fix my finances? How do I fix this relationship? How do I fix this? And they want us to give them some sort of answer. And listen, the first answer is, do you know Christ? If you don't, you cannot expect the blessings of God on your life without a relationship to God through His Son. Yes, Nikki and I went to the same school, but until we entered into a relationship of marriage, that was when I could start having a relationship that meant something, that made connections, that began to define things. People come into a church, that's not enough. The church is not your identity. Your identity is the fact that God has put His very image into you. So I would ask you, first of all, do you know Him? I would ask you, secondly, how are you getting to know Him better? You might say, well, my purpose is to glorify God. Let me tell you this, you will never completely fulfill that first purpose. There is always more to learn, always more to gain. It said that Moses grew up at 40. Do you know when he's really going to begin to know who God is? 80. 80. And then he's still got another 40 years of work to go. The point is, he hadn't reached a complete end to his life, but he began to see the picture and the purpose of what God was calling him to. And so if you're not growing closer to God, you're not going to be able to see that. You cannot be asking for secondary things while missing the primary thing. There's no room for that. Your Creator created you. So I want to encourage you in this. Are you simply seeking God to answer your prayers? Or are you asking God to work through them for a greater purpose? You know, if I say, God, work in my kids. Or if I say, God, help Nikki and I to have a strong relationship together. It's not just so I can have a great today. I recognize that my relationship to my wife will influence my kids and influence their kids and so on and so forth. And not just their kids, but influence the people that we influence every day. So the question becomes, are you just praying prayers, or are you praying for God to define and move a bigger purpose in your life? If you say, Heath, I don't know exactly what that big purpose is yet, the beautiful thing is you can discover it with God. But don't forget that first purpose. Is there anywhere in your life that you're failing to glorify Him? If you know it, it's going to make that second step really fuzzy. You're going to have a hard time, because the whole time you're asking God to do something bigger, you know the simple thing He's asking you to do first.